This segment of the Outpost On Demand podcast is brought to you by Gordo's Cheese Dip, America's number one selling cheese dip. Get dipping America with Gordo's. Every outdoorsman knows that before you head out to the woods or water, the first thing you do is to get your gear together. The next thing on your list is to pack up all your food. So while you're enjoying life in the great outdoors, don't forget to pick up America's number one cheese dip, Gordo's. Gordo's Cheese Dip, now in six delicious flavors. Available in the deli section of your local area Walmart or your favorite grocery store today. Get dipping America with Gordo's Cheese Dip.
The Outpost Radio on Demand. Here's Art Young from the Outpost Magazine.
We've got our special guest today who I think we've gotten in from the hunt. We've been trying to get our schedules in line, and she has a pretty ferocious schedule as it relates to getting out and getting some wild game. Eileen Clark, welcome to the show.
Thank you, Art. Glad to be here.
Yeah, we're glad to have you. How long have you been hunting and cooking your game?
Oh, I've been hunting for 30 or more years. And cooking it that long. When I married my husband, John Barsness, he was a pretty good game cook, and he got me started. I hadn't had a lot of game before that, and I decided he wasn't doing enough, so I went from there.
There's always, you know, behind every man and woman, there's another man or woman saying, you're not doing enough.
Yeah, I think so. You know, and it's interesting because I've gotten a lot of feedback from my deer and elk and red meat cookbooks, the big game cookbooks. And a lot of guys will say, you know, I used to do the cooking for the wild meat, but then I got your cookbook and my wife took it and she's doing it now and she likes it better.
Huh, interesting.
And I don't know if it's just that her tastes are different from his tastes or what the deal is, but it works, so I'm good.
Absolutely, you're good. And they say that there are two things you should never watch while they're being made, and that's laws and sausage.
And that's why I wrote the sausage book right there, because I wanted to be able to see what I was doing.
Right. Well, yeah. How does sausage get such a bad rap? I mean, to the point of being equated with politics, for goodness sakes. I mean, give me a little brief history on the history of sausage and why it's so colorful.
Well, sausage starts out really well. I think every culture in the world makes sausage. We're being from Northern European, a lot of Northern Europeans came to America during our immigrations, and so we're more used to those, the Polish sausage, the brats, the hot dogs, and all that stuff, but every culture makes it. And it started out being real meat, muscle meat, and then a little bit of fat thrown in, and people being in total control of it. Well, it was so popular, and eventually companies took over, and the companies got bigger and bigger, as we tend to do in this country. And then it became very commercial, and it was the bottom line counted a lot. And if you read a package of any kind of sausage or hot dog or bologna, there's that word, you know, vacuum in it. So you've got the cutting room floor, or I should say cutting room tables. Mm-hmm. And when, you know, they cut the steaks, they cut the burger, all that stuff off the bones, and then they take the vacuum and pick up a bunch of stuff to make sausage with. Well, that's not good.
Right,
I started off with that's not good.
As a layman, it doesn't sound good.
No. And then they add, because they're watching the bottom line, they're adding things to make it more moist rather than adding fat, which is getting pretty expensive. People are eating a lot of bacon these days, so pork fat's getting very expensive.
Uh-huh.
And that's, to me, that's the best fat for sausage, and that's what a lot of the commercial makers make. So you have prices going up on the fat, and so they'll add dry milk or soy powder or something like that that will help make it more moist. So you get that wonderful texture that sausage is. But you don't, as you said, you don't want to watch it being made.
Right, right. Well, yeah. you have a wonderful new book out, and it's called Sausage Season, Step-by-Step Making of Your Wild Game, Wildly Amazing. And the people that are listening to the Outpost, I think their ears just perked up when I said wild game, wildly amazing. Is that basically the premise of the book, to take wild game that we all go out and harvest every fall and winter and apply it to a sausage recipe?
It is, partly because we all have a lot of venison in our freezers. And some of it, you know, if you hunt the rut like my husband does, he loves mule deer in the rut. That can be a little gamey. Elk, if you're a bow hunter in Montana, the time of year you're hunting is when they're most gamey because they've been running around the woods chasing after, you know, girl elk. Mm-hmm. And so it's not all great meat that's in your freezer, and you don't want to waste it. You've spent a lot of time going out and killing it and bringing it home. So sausage is the perfect answer. And for years, I've been making my own sausage, and then I always had to do bulk in patties because when I would go to case it, it would get dry, and somebody would say, well, you got to try my sausage maker. He's so good. And they'd bring me some of their sausage, and it was dry, and it was oversalted and smoked within an inch of its life. So I wasn't happy with what I was seeing out there, and I figured a lot of other people weren't too. Mm-hmm. So I started this journey. It took me 2 years to work up the recipes. It took me months and months and months of research to figure out how the texture gets right. Because if you make sausage with just the meat and the fat and add the spices and don't know the technique of making it work, you're going to end up with crumbly sausage and dry sausage. And you just add more liquid and that just makes it crumbly with liquid. So it took a long time. And that's what sausage season is mostly about. There's 44 pages of how to get the right texture.
Right. I mean, it's amazing. I did spend some time with it, and I have never made, although I've been hunting since I was a boy, I've never made sausage. I've always turned over, you know, whatever I happen to be bringing back from the field, I've turned it over to a processor, and they've made it. Sometimes they've made it well, sometimes they've not made it very well. But you've really nailed this, and for somebody who is a hunter or outdoorsman in general, you've got troubleshooting sausage, you know, the many ways it can go wrong but doesn't have to, the importance of enough when casing sausage, equipments, you know, all those kinds of things. You've got a step, literally, you've got a step-by-step how to make sausage from wild game. Do you have a wild game that you prefer for sausage over others or not?
Well, I'll tell you what. There's one thing I wish we had in Montana, and that's wild pigs.
Yeah.
Because they make wonderful sausage.
Down, you can come down south, Eileen. In fact, if you get down to Texas, Louisiana, Mississippi, Alabama, or Georgia, we'll take care of you on a wild hog hunt.
Oh, I would love to. I love hunting wild hogs.
Yeah, they're just absolutely taking over this part of the world anyway. I happen to be in Louisiana today, but all over the south, it's hard to get out there without running into a herd of them.
But they're smart. You hunt them,
yeah,
and they get smart fast.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah.
And they procreate very well too.
yeah, I've heard that. But the other thing is, I didn't particularly care for goose meat.
Yeah.
And a friend of mine who hunts goose a lot, he came over for dinner one night, and I thought I would trick him a little bit, and I made some of our sausage, and I had deer sausage and elk sausage, and I also made some goose sausage. And I just put them out there on a platter, and after he'd stuffed himself, he says, well, what was that made out of? And I said, well, the ones you ate the most of were the goose sausage. and he was shocked that it could taste so good.
I've never been, that was going to be one of my questions, because we get a lot of geese. In fact, they winter in an area south of Houston, tens of millions of them. And there's just too many of them, and they're taking over, they're ruining their habitat in Canada. And there's literally way too many of them. So people are encouraged to bring them back, but I don't really have a recipe, and I've tried. I don't really have a recipe for wild goose. You know, and you've got a recipe in there, and that's real exciting.
And truthfully, you could take any of the recipes in the book and make them with goose, whatever, you know, your flavor preference is.
Uh-huh.
And
go ahead, I'm sorry.
I was just going to say it makes wonderful sausage. I also have recipes in there for turkey. because a lot of people don't bring back their legs, which is silly. Mm-hmm. They take the breath.
Yeah, we just normally people just breast them, and so you've got a way to use all of the turkey.
Yes, yes, and right. Turkey is different than the rest of the meat I've used, from wild pig to goose to duck to deer, elk, moose, whatever, in that apparently it doesn't have as much protein in it. So you have to add a little protein. That's the one place I did add a little soy protein. And that's one, in the technique of making sausage, it's the protein and the salt that are the science behind it, because there's this protein called myosin. And that is what, if you mix it properly and use enough salt, and you don't have to use a lot, but you have to use some, that's what makes that creamy texture, if you mix it properly.
Interesting. Yeah, and I'm sure processors know that. Do they? Would a commercial processor try to skimp on that, or does that? I mean, obviously you're not skimping on it because you're making it in your kitchen. But is that another problem of commercial processing of sausage?
Well, that's why there's so much powdered milk and soy powder in commercial sausage, because they're adding more protein that way, and I don't know what they're replacing, and are they not putting enough beef or pork or whatever in there? I don't know.
Huh. How interesting. Well, you know, it's something that if you are a hunter, you should definitely get this book. It's called Sausage Season, Step-by-Step Making Your Wild Game Wildly Amazing by my guest Eileen Clark, who is off of the have you gotten your limit already for this season, or you hunt every day, don't you?
I hunt almost every day. Right now we're having this lovely little nasty weather. It's snowing, and the temperature dropped like 30 degrees, and it's blowing. And I'm going to be out there as soon as this is over, because the animals are going to be moving now.
Yeah, cool.
Yeah, they haven't. It's been too warm. They haven't been moving.
Yeah.
But let me point out one other thing.
Sure.
If people are having to make sausage out of every animal they bring home, they need to look at their field dressing and aging and all that stuff technique. And I have another book. It's a companion book to Sausage Season, because you need to know what happens before you get to the grinding pile. And that's called Slice of the Wild.
And by the way, it's
80 pages of how-to.
It is a beautiful, beautiful gift idea, too, if you want. I'm looking at it now, and it's we'll have this in our feature on the magazine. We'll have a cover so you can pick it out. I want to come back to that, because you had some really interesting things in that book too that a hunter should be aware of. Kind of before the animal goes down, there's some things that you should even be aware of. But tell me where people can buy these two books. Where can you buy Slice of the Wild or the Sausage Book?
We have, my husband, John Barsis, and I have a website. It's called Rifles, and it's the and is spelled out, recipes.com. And if people are not on the Internet or they have trouble with the site, they can give me a call at 406-521-0273.
Great.
And that's my cell phone, so I answer it all the time.
You'll be up in the blind.
Well, except when I'm in the blind,
yeah. I was going to say, you'll have on vibrate if it's during hunting time. Eileen's got her priorities straight here, folks. It's important to get out there and chase them. But these two books are wonderful, and I appreciate you. We're gonna allow a couple of our readers and listeners to win a copy of both of these books. So, you know, we'll put that up on our social networks as we get into it. But one of the interesting things about, and I've heard this all my life from guides and people that are, you know, good and do this for a living, pretty much like you do, what is it about the chase of an animal that causes it to taste weird? What's going on when you've got an elk or a deer that's, you know, run half a mile after he's shot? What happens in that deer to make it taste game?
Well, that's as soon as he feels fear, whether he's seen you and starts running or you've taken a shot and he starts running, adrenaline is instantly in his system, and that, or her system, whichever you're shooting, and adrenaline is a terrible marinade. It's awful.
It doesn't sound good.
No, it isn't. It and you know, depending on what time of year you're hunting, you know, if you're in Montana, we can only bow hunt during the elk rut. And if you take an elk that's been rutting for a couple of 3 weeks and hasn't had time to recover from those exertions, because he's running, he's not eating, he's thinking of the wrong things 24 hours a day, and he's not going to taste good. So, you know, there's things that we do, and then there's things that they do that make meat taste bad, wild meat.
Yeah. Is there, what can you do to, I mean, besides being a great shot and dropping them with one shot, what can somebody do to keep that adrenaline from marinating the meat?
Well, that's the biggie is I see a lot of people do these drives with deer, and sometimes that's the only way to get them out of the brush, but that immediately starts the adrenaline running. So if you shoot them, then you run the, you know, run into the danger of not having good flavor. But, you know, that's the only way I know, you know, be sneaky, not let them know you're there. Practice your shooting so you can make the best shot possible. Lose as little meat as possible, and hopefully they'll go down quick, and adrenaline won't be a big factor.
Is there a better way of field dressing an animal to make it come out better as well? I mean, some people throw they do a cursory field dressing and throw the buck on the, you know, in the back of the pickup and take it into a processor, and that may take, you know, 6 or 7 hours at the end of the day. So is that a problem, or does it make any difference in how you field dress an animal?
I think that's a problem. I think it's a big problem. And the other part of that is the animal getting cooled down? Because if it's, say, over 30 degrees, you're going to have a problem getting that animal cooled down within 3 to 4 hours, which is the optimum. And, you know, the warmer it is, the more you have to do to get it cooled down. A lot of people always skin an animal. A lot of people always cut up the sternum, the chest, to open it up so that more air circulates. We always split the pelvis so that the back legs, which are usually the most meaty and the most dense, can open up and not be touching each other, because you want air to circulate around all the surfaces of the animal. The field dressing, we always completely field dress them. Cutting off the throat, well, I'm not coming up with the right word, but the trachea above,
yeah,
where the heart and lungs are.
Right.
And then we then lift the animal up, dump out all the loose blood, and rinse it. We always carry 5-gallon water cans with us, and we rinse the animal out so there's no debris, no blood sitting on anything. So that's two factors, is cooling and cleanliness.
Yeah, that's good advice. Do you typically cut the legs off and all that stuff out in the field, or do you take it back to your house, or what do you do on, you know?
Well, it depends on where we are. If it's warm and we're not close to home, we take those big great big coolers. I think they call them striper coffins in the South, like a 100-quart cooler. Yeah,
75 gallons or something ridiculous.
Yeah, and so a lot of times you do have to cut off the lower leg, you know, where there's no meat at all, and skin them and put them, or not even skin them if you don't have to, but put them inside white plastic bags. It's not really recommended to do it with colored bags for some reason. And then put them in the cooler and make sure there's ice between the quarters as you're working, so that air does circulate and the coolness gets everywhere. I took a moose September 15th one year, and granted it wasn't a big moose, but it was 80 degrees.
Wow.
And we were like 10 minutes from our house, and we ran home, got the striper coffin out and loaded it with the moose, and then made sure the moose quarters, and then we made sure there was ice between every piece of meat and lots of it. And then we closed it, and we would check it every 20 minutes or so to make sure everything was cooling down, and it was. And it was a great moose, despite the weather.
Mm-hmm. Does moose taste – I've never had moose. Does that taste different from, say, white-tailed deer?
Yes, it's more like elk and beef. They eat – elk, beef, and moose all eat grass rather than forbs like antelope, and deer eat other things.
Uh-huh.
So, there is a taste difference. Moose is also the lowest in fat of all the game animals.
Interesting.
Yeah, most of them, deer and elk and all that, are like 4% fat, and moose is down slightly below 1%.
Oh, my goodness. Does it make any difference when, in some states, it's legal to put out deer attractant or corn or whatever? Does it make any difference the type of where it's legal, where you can, you know, where you, and I'm not sure that it is in Montana, it is in Texas, for example. Does that attractant change the taste of the meat at all?
Well, it depends on how long you're laying that attractant out. My guess is in Texas, where they have corn feeders everywhere,
yeah,
it does affect the way the meat tastes and probably makes it taste better. And probably makes lets them put on a lot more fat, which is always good. But, yeah, we're not allowed to do that in Montana. So, you know, I know that if I shoot an animal on a sugar beet field, for instance, they taste wonderful.
Oh, interesting.
Yeah, and they get really fat. There are lots of calories in what's left on the sugar beet field. Geese like that, too. So, mm-hmm. Yeah, it does make a difference what they're eating.
Yeah. This is a fascinating subject, and we're running out of time, unfortunately. We'll have to do this again. I mean, as whenever the season ends, we may try to impose on you again to chat about wild game preparation. Eileen Clark has got a great new book out. She's actually got two books that you can get that we're talking about today. The most recent one is Sausage Season, and this is a step-by-step making your wild game wildly amazing. And she also has Slice of the Wild, which is a cut and cook game of your table, and it's brilliant. I mean, brilliantly, both of them I think are really important for outdoorsmen and women to understand how to prepare the meat. We once again tell everybody how they can get a copy of these books.
I have a website. It's riflesand spelled out recipes.com. But if that's not working or you're down on the internet, I have a phone number, 406-521-0273, and that's my cell phone. I have it on me, except when I'm in a whitetail blind. And I will call you back as soon as I can.
Yeah, she will do that. I promise you, she will do that. You're absolutely, you get back to people quicker than anybody I've ever known. And Eileen's probably, if the weather clears, good luck this afternoon. Is it going to clear enough to you can get a late evening deer hunt or no?
Well, I'm not sure. I'm going to have to check my weather station and see when this might clear out. But it'd be a good thing to be out there just before it does. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, good luck to you and good luck on this book. And we appreciate you taking the time to talk with us.
Well, thank you, Art. It was fun.
The Outpost Radio On Demand from the on-demand page of theoutpostlife.com.